You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet.
Revolution. Okay, get ready, everyone. Welcome to Carrying Stones and Digging Holes to Cultivate Consciousness, where, for the next 2 hours, Bridget Lynn Dolgoff and Kelsey Sweet will be sharing their knowledge and understanding with their own beautifully unique twists on all topics related to helping humanity to achieve betterment of health in body and in mind. Settle yourselves down on this fine Saturday evening. For now, it is time for Bridget and Kelsey.
All right, everybody. Hey, it's Bridget and Kelsey. Saturday. 8 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, except for we're on Pacific Time, so we're on 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and hey, do the donate. We've got four different locations to do the donate. We've got Zazzle.com, get yourself a favorite host, a really cool t-shirt, pick up some A Mad Painter artwork. Go to the website, click the donation button, drops down, do a credit card, your unemployment card. let's see what else. Oh, Patreon. It's a weird little red button. It's on the site. And you can give the kind of donation that you want every month. $5, $10. We love it. We love it. We love it. And I think I'm missing something. I got Zazzle. Oh, snail mail. And you can go to the bottom of the website, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. It's where the donate button is on the top. And then at the bottom, we got snail mail donation. So you can write a check, money order, and send it snail mail. And Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And if you look in Studio B, scroll down, you'll see the thumbnail for our show, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Click on the thumbnail. It'll give you a back page. And it has all kinds of bio information, the show, just, you know, stuff we're doing, contact, and whatever else. So we are working on maybe putting together some classes that could be really fun and coming up in the near future. So we're going to work on that and see if we can actually get it to the public. See how we can get it done. But yeah, yes. So that's what we've got. So what have you got?
I don't know. That's kind of it. Just preparing for Christmas stuff and keeping a toddler entertained with Santa Claus and presents and the magic of it all. So that's been a highlight. I don't know, just trying to navigate the way through the end of the year. I'm excited about the solstice coming up. That'll be nice.
Yeah, crazy energy for sure. I mean, yesterday Saturn finally moved out of Capricorn. Today I think Jupiter moves out, and they both swing into Aquarius. Some people are calling it the I was talking to a friend of mine, the Aquarius age. But definitely a 20-year cycle has ended, a 240-year cycle has ended, and an 800-year cycle has ended. So Monday, a new 20-year cycle begins, a new 240-year cycle begins, and a new 800-year-old cycle begins. So, yeah.
And set intentions, and I know like all the 11-11 stuff has been kind of a big deal, or just like the multiplications with the 2020, but I think if there's a powerful time to shift gears, kind of that spiritual realm a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you should end whatever you were driving before and get into a new energy and drive that into Monday. Set the tone for your new paradigm. Because only you can do it.
Only you can prevent what is equivalent to forest fires in your spiritual growth and development.
Only you can prevent looping. Looping is one of those shamanism terms where the same things happen over and over again, and they may have different, you know, players, but it's the same old thing over and over and over again till you die.
Good time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard to get off that rat wheel, you know, when you kind of get stuck on it. But, you know, I love what Esther Hicks always says. You know, I'm not a big channeler, but I do like, I think the Abraham is kind of funny in kind of a really interesting way. But I remember like this really amazing story that Esther Hicks told. And it was about this family who basically at Christmas time had this family potato dish. And so this potato dish had to be on the table, and it didn't matter who made it. And it was kind of like passed down. And at one point, the granddaughter started questioning the other women in the family and saying, you know, like, why do we make this potato dish? Why do we make it the way that we make it? Why do we cut the ends of the potatoes off? Why do they have to be, you know, systematically put into the dish the way that we do it? And, you know, because it's a smart granddaughter. It's like, okay, so why am I repeating this? How many generations have I been repeating it? So nobody really knew the answer. So basically, somebody got on the horn, started calling around the family members, and saying, okay, so the granddaughter's got a question about why we all do it exactly this way in the same way, and why it has to be done this way, because she's going to be making the potato dish for, you know, the family dinner, Christmas dinner. So everybody got on the horn, they're trying to talk, and it came down to this. It was like the grandmother. The grandmother said, well, you know, the reason why we cut the ends of the potatoes off and we put it into this potato dish is because great-grandma made this dish, but her pan was not very big. So she had to cut the edges of the potatoes off to get them to fit in the dish. And thus, Albert Einstein, keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So always think about that, especially around the holidays, because everybody gets really, you know, cranky-manky during the holidays. Like, it has to be this way. It has to be a certain kind of food on the table. Well, why is that? Maybe, you know, since the new paradigm is coming in on Monday, maybe, you know, come up with a new dish. What are your thoughts?
I like the idea of new traditions. I think it's really helpful because there's so many of those cycles, right? Those loops that keep people stuck into these different ideologies of what those are supposed to be. And then when we're trying to shift and grow and do all these things together, it makes it really impossible. I don't know. People just project a bunch of stuff or they have certain expectations on things, and it just makes things so much harder than it needs to be. So much harder. Like, people just get stuck down in these lower level vibrations, and then it takes away from the charm of it all. It takes away from the appeal. It takes away from the whole point, because we've lost touch with what the ceremonial aspect of it is. I think we take for granted a lot of the things that are just given to us and handed to us. And we latch onto these ideas without really knowing why. And we hold on to them without really knowing why. It just baffles my mind, really. I think some traditions are important to maintain. It's nice to know the history. And I think there's certain sacred acts that have to be preserved. But how do we adapt and grow if we're not allowed to deviate?
Yeah. Or ask the question, why?
Yeah.
I was watching, we're kicking back, just trying to have a mellow afternoon after, you know, the craziness that's been going on in my life. But I think it's like, you know, really everything's kind of working in on closing this last, you know, big section. I think probably not just in my reality. And, you know, and over the last couple of months, one thing I've really learned is that sometimes extremely negative events have to happen sometimes for things to happen in the right way.
It's like a wake-up call, I guess, or I don't. It's hard to not go into the judgment of whether something is positive or negative. But I don't know, I grapple with that because there are definitely like more divine influences in the world, and there are demonic influences in the world, like these evil forces. And it's, I think those judgments and attributions are important to a point. It's discerning kind of what's what can be really challenging, or knowing where those personal boundary lines are energetically within yourself to navigate and maintain that. It's tricky.
Yeah, it goes back to my teacher. It is what it is, and it's going to be exactly what it's going to be, and you have no control.
The realm of psychology, that it's kind of the idea that stems out of dialectic behavior therapy, where we have the radical acceptance. Just you accept it because it is what it is, and there's nothing you can do to change it. You can't alter it, especially when something really traumatic happens. You have to radically accept why the thing happened in your life, and then figure out how to survive and thrive and grow beyond that. It's so hard. So hard. Getting into the realm of consciousness and getting out of the physical body, it sucks, especially if there's like a threat to your personal well-being in any shape or form. I don't know.
Well, it seems like we have a lot of those. We have a lot of threats to people's personal well-being.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it shocks me that, you know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell if, you know, they're giving the vaccine to somebody who passed out and dies live on TV, or if, you know, it's a false flag and, you know, it's an actor getting, you know, like a false vaccine. I mean, we just don't really know, like, in our, you know, in the reality is like, what is fact and what is fiction? And it's so convoluted, trying, you know, to figure out if, you know, if what's real.
You get these weird half-truths or things that are somewhat there, but there's elements that are missing or details that are left out or things that are altered just so. And it's tricky because it just brings us back to the idea of what is reality and what is consciousness and what does it really mean to be alive? I mean, like ping pong in and out of this like very subjective experience versus like the collective. And it's hard to be in both places at once. Really tricky. There's like there has to be a level of detachment. I don't know, people get so, well, like with these traditions, right? They get so attached and locked into the way things should be, or the way things are supposed to be. And with things changing so rapidly and so quickly, like it's hard to stay in the monkey mind and the logic and the reason for it. I don't know, like what I just feel like the whole point to doing this kind of work is just to bring people to a new understanding. They bring themselves to it. I don't know. The realm of like healing the collective and dealing with consciousness is, it's hard to articulate, but I think that in that difficulty and in that struggle, like if we can be very aware and cognizant of the words that we're using and use them wisely, that would be great. But everything's just, there's so much ego. There's so much.
Huge ego.
Huge, huge ego.
Huge ego. Yeah.
Not just like within individuals, but within groups of people or communities of people, and just this idea of the way things should be. And then the fighting for the territory, or the fighting to be on top, or the, I'm not really sure why there's that urge to dominate. But I'm not a man. I don't know if that's a masculine thing. I don't know if there's like projections in that or not, or like, I don't know.
No, the hard part is that, you know, we women end up on the end of it. I was thinking about that, you know, and with everything that's kind of transpired in my life, you know, having been caretaking somebody who, you know, has more than just, you know, dementia, has like, you know, split personality disorder. And, you know, ultimately being strangled and punched repeatedly in trying to help somebody and caretake them. And I was thinking about, you know, why like home healthcare is so tough. And, you know, why dealing with, you know, homes where there's people with, you know, dementia and just, dementia is just like, you know, it's just a terrible disease for the people who actually have to take care of the people who have it, because, you know, we're threatened and they yell at us and they scream at us and throw things at us and accuse us of lying because they don't have memory, you know, of events, and they don't have a recollection. So as far as they're concerned, you know, the person who's doing the caretaking is somehow the liar. And what's even more interesting is that, you know, a lot of the homes don't want to take, you know, people who have Alzheimer's anymore, because it turns out that I think it's something like, you know, 75% of Alzheimer patients, you know, they get stronger and they get more aggressive and more violent. A very small percentage, you know, will sit just in front of the TV and kind of be like, you know, passively checked out. But they don't like to put a lot of these Alzheimer people around other aging people because there's a high rate of homicide by the Alzheimer person to other patients in the facility. And if they're sharing a room with somebody, you know, that kind of murder their roommate. I was thinking about, like, you know, in my attempt to help the person that that I was helping, you know, I tried to move heaven and earth. You know, I've dealt with extreme Alzheimer patients in the past. I had a woman who was a Coca-Cola heiress, and, you know, her family just didn't want to put her in a home. She was like 6 going into 7 stage Alzheimer, and she was had lost it. She most of the time didn't really know anything. She kept escaping because they wouldn't put a proper lock on the door that locked with a key from the inside so the caregivers could keep her in. And she'd go missing, and the police would put like GPS tracking device on her, and she would get people to cut it off. And it was radical, and she was pretty aggressive. And we would have like I had a 35-hour shift and a 24-hour shift during the week. And I learned after like the second shift, like I couldn't sleep because I woke up and, you know, here she is standing over the bed with, you know, some scissors, asking me who in the F I am, what the hell am I doing in her house? You know, just insanity. And so, you know, we're at this period where like 1 in 7 adults has Alzheimer's in the United States. And I think a lot of it has to do with the vaccines, heavy metals, has a lot to do with the chemtrails, has a huge amount to do with the food, for sure, and medications. And, you know, what are these people going to do? You know, like I spent a huge amount of time trying to help this person, you know, since 2006. And, you know, even going to the VA, trying to talk to social workers because they can't talk to me because, you know, this person doesn't have anyone listed for power of attorney medical. They don't have anyone listed as their number one contact. So nobody really has legal authority over them or, you know, can help them. So they won't, you know, talk to you about the person. And there's all these, you know, civil rights where the person, you know, has to actually ask for the brain scan or the dementia test, which isn't going to happen because the people don't know that they have it for the most part. And then, you know, going to, then you kind of have to go up the, you know, food chain to like senior services and things like that. And, you know, it's really hard for me because I'm anti-medicine, you know, how it is. And, you know, I'm like anti sometimes government. So it puts me in a really challenging place that, you know, I have to communicate as a caregiver to these systems who don't absolutely positively want to help these people at all. And that these people, you know, it's like I tell people, would you give your 2-year-old like the sharpest knife in the cabinet and let them like, you know, run around with it? Probably not. And that's like when you're dealing with somebody who has dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, they get to a point where they are not allowed, you know, to make their own decisions. And the people that are caring for them become ultimately the major enemy and the liar and the deceiver because the person, you know, does not know that they have dementia. It's not like they have memory loss and go, I think I had some memory loss. They don't have that later on down the road. So, yeah, last night I got strangled and punched by the person that I was trying to help. And that was kind of the line in the sand. And then I had been trying to, you know, contact the family, been trying to work with the family by email and everything else for the last year and send out emails and about things going on and have documentation. And then, you know, they just have no interest And yeah, so it makes it extremely, extremely difficult to be a caregiver. And caregiver is probably, you know, in the medical system, probably the most, you know, difficult job.
It's so hard. I did home caretaking when I was pregnant for like the first, I think like 3 months or so. And it was, I've never been so, I don't know, I waited tables. So it's hard to compare the two in terms of which I was berated more in. But it's just so physically demanding, and it's mentally demanding. And then being able to show up and care for somebody who doesn't necessarily, I can't say they don't appreciate it, but where there's like this level of entitlement, or you just start falling into the systems, or you become very hyper aware of the limitations within the systems that have created these problems for people in the first place. And it's tough. It's like you're navigating and just trying to like keep the fire kind of contained, and nobody's trying to, I can't say nobody, but it just feels like there's not as many preventative managers, and there's not a whole lot of resources out there for people. I mean, there are, but there aren't. And it's tough because like there's the altruistic part of humanity that wants to help and care for and to do the work. But then there's this other side of humanity, or maybe it's not humanity, and other forces that interfere with that. And it's just, I don't know. It sucks too when you get emotionally attached to somebody, and then you have to detach in a way, because the human condition it's tough. Like walking around in a meat suit it's tough.
Well, I think too is like when you are doing like home health care and you have, you know, a person, a patient, I don't know what you want to call them, that you're looking after, that, especially when they have dementia, because you start to find out things about them that you may not like. For example, when I was doing the Coca-Cola Heiress in Los Alamos, this was like years ago, but it turned out that she, when she was raised, her dad owned like, had the Bank of Georgia, right? So they were also linked into like the banks, some of the first, you know, banks that were like in Georgia. And it turned out that her family had slaves, you know, like I'm not sure exactly what the capacity of the slaves, like, you know, I mean, the way that I, you know, would define slavery is it, you know, forced having to work for somebody or perform for somebody for nothing, basically. But I'm not really sure what the capacity is, but the more that I was around her and the things that she would say to me because of her dementia, so she's playing her records backwards. So as the brain dies, you play your life backwards. So you would, you know, go back to your 20s and kind of relive them. You're in them with the world that's around you, and you less and less know about the world that's going on around you. And then you just keep going back until the brain is like completely gray and completely dead. But I remember a couple times where she looked at me and she told me that I should get my black ass in gear, because, you know, if I didn't, then her daddy was, you know, going to make me. And it got to where I had to quit caretaking this woman because I realized like what a horrible human being she was, and that somehow, you know, she'd like hid this from people, you know, in society, you know, kind of like where she was living. But ultimately she was not a good person when she was young, and how she, you know, what she said to these, you know, slaves that work for them, and the things that she did. And, you know, I think same thing with the person that I've been taking care of, you know, like you just start finding out things about them. And I, you know, like I'm just not about doing things for money, right? It has to have, I have to be able to, you know, have my heart involved in it. It has to be good. And so I have to like the person. I'm going to have respect for them. And when you don't have that for your patient, it's, you know, you shouldn't be taking care of them. And the other thing too, is that, you know, the abandoned people who need caretakers are abandoned for a reason. You know, most of the time it's because their families don't want to take care of them. Their families don't want to have anything to do with them. And there's, you know, usually a reason why. There's usually a backstory.
It can be tough. I found limitations too within that too, in wanting to be able to do more and help other people, and just not because of the role, because of the title, or because of, I guess, just the title that, the expectations that those titles carry. I don't know. Home caring is just challenging. I feel like people should find some experience in it. It's definitely a humbling experience, but it's not for the lighthearted, or it's not for the faint-hearted. And I think when you see people in conditions like that, It's tricky. I did behavioral therapies for persons with developmental disabilities of various sorts. And so many of them were elderly and just so low functioning and just so incapable of taking care of themselves, but so aggressive. Just so aggressive towards themselves, towards others, and it's kudos to the people who can continue to do that day in and day out and day in and day out. And I remember I had one client several years ago who, on my first day alone with her, eloped out of her home, went down the street, chucked a huge rock at me and picked up a tree branch and told me I had to answer to God. You know, and this is somebody who used to get trainers by their hair, who would spit and throw things and would cuss at you. I mean, all the insults you could take, you know, threatening your life. And it's just, you gotta love people for where they're at. And it's just, you gotta find a way to preserve yourself in that too. And it's hard because there's a big part that wants to continue to care for and to nurture others and to be able to help and support. And there just comes a point in time where there's a threshold for that. And that threshold can be really heartbreaking.
Yep. I've done all kinds of home health care, and it's been crazy.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, because, you know, like if you have quads, I first started out when I was like, I don't know, 19, 20, helping out quads. But, you know, that's a huge job because they're paralyzed, you know, from the neck down usually. Sometimes, you know, the whole everything. And, you know, you have to, you know, get them ready for the day. So you have to deal with the pee-pee and the poo-poo. I mean, mm-hmm. You actually have to put a glove up to your elbow and stick it up the person's bungholio. And there's these maneuvers that you do that you release the muscles in the colon so that you can scrape all the poop out because they don't have muscles that work anymore. And you have to get them out of bed, and you have to shower them and take care of them and feed them. And I had one quad who had been a quad for like 30 years, and his wife, I mean, you know, you can understand, like, at some point in time, the family doesn't want to, you know, keep getting you out of bed and showering you every day. And, you know, they want you to find help, you know, in order to do that. But, you know, because it's a tough job, coming into somebody's home and doing it, taking care of, you know, all their physical stuff that they need done. You know, there's not a lot of pay for it either. So they don't really retain people, you know, to continue to kind of do that job. But I remember, you know, I learned a lot and I was shocked at sometimes, you know, how if the family members were around, you know, how they had a tendency to be pretty abusive.
Yeah, I witnessed a lot of that as well. Just with the types of persons that I interacted with, they didn't have family or people who would take care of them. And then the home service providers or the persons who would take care of them, not always the best people or not always the most educated people. And you would see them doing things or reinforcing or punishing behaviors that just made issues and problems worse. And it's like just constant upkeep or just having to go back and reteach and relearn the same like basic things over and over and over again. It's so daunting. Like, it just feels like you're not helping when you're helping, especially when the pay is so low. Like, it's demoralizing. But there's highlights to it. I don't think that people would do the kind of work if they didn't care, if there wasn't something important about it or just something very natural about caretaking to begin with.
Well, you know, I think I've just had a lot of challenging patients. I've been pushed over to the edge.
Yeah,
more times than I can count.
Yeah, when you've been chased, bit, choked, stabbed, have had things thrown at you, it's tough. It sounds a lot like parenting sometimes too. Parenting can be rough like that. But there's no pay in parenting. The payoff is all intrinsic, I suppose. No, it's... Ooh, huh.
So, yeah. So what's your week been like? Everybody that I've talked to said that their week has been, I was talking to a friend of mine who is on a mission who has had a person living in her house for, I don't know, like 4 years or something like that. And they were like, you know, childhood friends and stuff like that. And it's just, the whole thing has just been so crazy. The person, you know, had been married and got a divorce and didn't really know how to kind of take care of herself. And so, she was kind of living there. And so my friend saved money to finally move her back to another part of California, kind of closer to her kids, you know, so that she could, you know, get her out of the house, because it's so crazy and there's just so much drama, because she's caregiving, you know, on a different level, but it can be, a lot of the same. There can be a lot of, you know, emotional stuff and just, you know, high intensity stuff. And the girl, she's not a girl, she's like my age, but, you know, she came with like two horses and, you know, she just couldn't manage to take care of them. And so my friend was paying to actually have to board these horses. And then something happened with one of them and they had to put one of the horses down. And it's just been like, for 4 years, it's just been like constant drama with this person. And so my friend's on this mission and she's in the process of dropping her off with, you know, her two dogs with her kids and helping to pay for them a house to, you know, all move into so that, you know, she can get in her car and drive home. And hopefully they'll have like a happy ever after and they'll be able to keep it going. But I was thinking, you know, a lot of the stuff that she's doing right now with this other person is, you know, extremely similar to, you know, trying to take care of somebody who has dementia and Alzheimer's. You know, home health care. And like you were saying, you know, having a kid can be a lot, can be similar to that as well.
Well, they can't do anything for themselves. You have to watch them constantly. And constant emotional regulation. And it's neat when, it's neat with kids because you can, you watch them grow and you watch them learn, and it's a different type of caretaking. Like my grandmother right now, she has dementia, and for the last year especially, watching the deteriorating when somebody is unlearning and just slowly losing the progress that they've made throughout their whole life. It's a different type of caretaking. It's a different type of connecting. I think that's why there are people who work with grieving and people who help people transition into death, because it's a different space. It's a different type of energy to deal with than with kids. Just like working with persons who have developmental disabilities, it's a different type of caretaking. You know, it requires a different level of attention, and it, you know, each of them requires a level of self-sacrifice in a way, or just sacrifice. And then finding the balance of being able to care for yourself while caring for another person, that's a tough one. That's a real, real tough one.
So here's to all of the home healthcare workers. This bud is for you.
Yeah. I mean, we see you, we feel you, we hear you out there. It's definitely not easy. You know, and I've watched my mom over the last few years do what she can to help caretake for my grandparents as they're aging, and my aunt within the last few months, she's moved in with my grandparents, and watching her caretake, it's neat in a way to see how people grow and go into these different phases of their lives, and then connect to family members as they're going through these transitions and things. And I think my family is lucky enough that it's got a tight, pretty, on my maternal side, it's got the tight family network, so we can have a lot of resources and privileges that a lot of people don't have. It's not many, but it's definitely, I know it makes it easier for my grandma. And I know one of my grandmother's biggest fears and one thing she absolutely does not want is to ever be put into a home, you know, and for her to not be able to do basic things, it's tough. You know, like she has a hard time with it. You know, she doesn't want to stick around, but she does. You know, she does for us, and thank goodness. But it's hard to watch people suffer.
It is. We made a promise to my mom, me and my sister, about not putting my, you know, mom in a care facility because she was, you know, dying of cancer. Well, she actually had 4 different types of cancer over a 3-year period. You know, the medical system, you know, did a gnarly job on her, killed her, gave her way too much chemo and whatever else. And we, you know, made her a promise. I mean, she was living with my sister in California, and then I would go down there and take care of her for 10 days a month, and other family members that were kind of in similar boats, and do all of the caregiving, you know, kind of stuff, and food preparation, and just, you know, being there. And we, you know, couldn't keep her at home. It just got really tough because of her, you know, health conditions, and At some point, we had to concede and put her into hospice. And then we felt really bad because, you know, she cried and was super upset that, you know, we would break our promise. But I think sometimes you don't really know. It's hard to make certain kind of promises because you don't know. And the other thing, too, is like I had medical training, but most of the people in my family didn't have any kind of medical training. And my sister was like not interested in dealing with that aspect of it because she couldn't deal with the scars my mom had from the surgeries. And, you know, she couldn't cope with it. So sometimes, you know, it's a super difficult. You have to make decisions that are, you know, the best for them, you know, at that moment in time, even if you have to like go back on your word, you know, that you've made a promise.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough too. Well, that's the tough love or the unconditional love, or we get people when they're in spaces where they can't make decisions for themselves. I mean, what else are you supposed to do?
Yeah. Well, that's it. If you have a 2-year-old running with a really sharp knife, is that a really good decision? That's kind of like how I look at people who are kind of mentally incapacitated, you know, or they need things done with their health that you just can't do at home.
No.
And then what, you start to harm them instead of, you know, help them, even though you have like the best intentions, you know, that you could have.
It gets tricky. And I think it kind of goes along the lines too of why, like in the realm of psychology, you're not supposed to do therapy with your family or people who are super, super close, because there's a level of bias or there's a level of emotional attachment that can be harmful towards yourself as well. That's not to say that people who aren't or don't know each other can't form those emotional bonds and things. It's just a different energy.
Yeah, my sister was super emotionally attached to my mom, and I think kind of the same thing, that my sister ended up exhibiting some bad behavior. That's why I moved back from Canada to help my mom and do home health care, you know, for at least a percentage of the month. But my sister like just had, you know, like a meltdown and ended up like slapping my mom. And, you know, kind of a thing. And my mom told my grandmother. And so I ended up, you know, coming in back into that situation to try to help out.
Well, that's tricky too. Well, it's hard to, I don't know. Some people, you can get so easily pushed to those different limits, but you're right. Like, it's just, I don't know. Whew. It's all the, like, heavy stuff kind of going into the holidays, but the holidays always feel so heavy, especially with family stuff. So I'm glad we get to talk about this, because I think there's so much light and so much like all the whatever around the holidays, but especially this time of year, like mental health for people it's really tricky. There's the seasonal affect disorder. Depression rates are a lot higher, and then we're dealing with COVID stuff on top of it. Like people are, oh, and then coming into all these planetary alignments and all these odd celestial or just these rare celestial events. I think people, like, we're just kind of scratching the surface of what people are capable of doing and the level of care that it's going to take in order to, like, carry our species forward. I don't know that a lot of people are capable of being able to conceptualize what type of caretaking that would take. I think there are a lot of people who are very sheltered from the potential of the how do I want to put it, of the human form. I think one of the things that I found most fascinating doing home care, especially for somebody, I had one woman who was paraplegic. When you see the more like the more disgusting side of, not, I won't call it disgusting because there's a beauty in it, but when you see the body in a state that has been deformed, or when you see a person who is not like the Hollywood movie star, like somebody out of, like, it can be kind of shocking. Like, there's just a level of morbidity that I don't know that a lot of people, especially within the Western societies, are fully adapted to. It's kind of like they kind of go to one extreme or another. Just like people who seem to be very over fascinated by it, and people who are like obsessed with these kind of things. But then I think there are a lot of people who just don't really grasp what the human body can do, or how the human body can recover from some of the most horrific experiences. It's fascinating and it's phenomenal, but people who have disabilities and people who aren't fully mobile and don't have the blessings of deformities or limitations or mental disorders or emotional stuff, like, are these people, like, how do we get these people to help? Are these people that can help? Are these people that are going to be able to be empathetic to these sort of things? Are these people empathetic towards these sort of things? I always wonder, because I just think things are going to get a lot harder.
Yeah, I think right now things are pretty tough for, like, a lot of people. We're going to have a break, like, in about 4 minutes. But, yeah, so, you know, be extra special to people that are having a bit of a tough time.
Yeah, extra thoughtful, extra caring. In just little ways, I think the littlest things that we can do for people can make the biggest difference. Make such a huge difference. Even if it's like holding open a door for somebody or picking up something that somebody had dropped. Even just making eye contact and smiling. I know it's like mask face, whatever. But we smile with our eyes too, you know. Just acknowledging somebody's existence and just honoring and respecting the life as it is. Just acknowledging that people struggle. I don't know. It's hard not to get all like airy fairy and light and fluffy with it. Like, I feel like people need to be shooken. Like, come on, just be nice. Just get over it, you know? You're going to elevate people, and if you're going to show up and do the work, if you're going to help people, don't talk about it. Do it, you know. Do the work. Talking is part of it. I don't know. We get into these weird things. We've got the other mini co-host chiming in, too. There we go. The wisdom. The wisdom of the youth.
The wisdom of the youth.
The wisdom of the youth. He's just so like open and free and just wants to connect with people on so many levels. It's neat, and I feel so grateful on so many levels to be able to share this time and the experience of having a kiddo within the holidays. This year, time of year has always just been kind of blah for me. I've just always had a hard time connecting with the material. Let's give presents and do the whatever. The kid kind of brings the magic to it. Oh, and it's almost his birthday, too. His birthday is 2 days after Christmas, so my son's going to turn 5. I'm just super excited about that, trying to wrap my head around, like, my baby not being a baby.
I think he's still a baby.
It's just... It's giant. It's interesting watching the shift and watching the change. Just the subtle little differences.
What do you think your biggest change is right now with his development, where he's at?
I think within the last year, just him becoming conscious of himself and having more self-awareness. That one is cool. Like, there's these just moments where I can see him recognizing himself in things and finding his own autonomy and identity, which is neat, because he's always just been an extension of, or have that extension of me, or he's just always been so selfless. So watching him, just form himself and start to define his boundaries and his interests, like his personality is really starting to come out. It's neat. It feels like a very delicate age, like 5 to 7 feels super delicate. Like, these next couple of years are going to be super key into locking in just a sense of security of himself within himself. I think if there's anything I can give him as a mom, it's just security in himself as a person, and just the self-esteem of knowing that, you know, if he can care for and support and take care of himself, then he can extend that, and he can provide that care and level of support to others. I think that would be cool.
Alrighty, we're on break. We'll be right back. Yay. Just a few minutes.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message. She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
The time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I've pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Alrighty.
Back.
We need like a Jack Nicholson in I'm back. I know. All right, so we're at the last week of the solstice. And I decided that I think teaching people kind of how to do a little bit of firework, grandfather firework, would be kind of helpful without going into a super intense thing. Because, you know, ceremony, we use a lot of, you know, firework. But I would like to try to teach people, like, you always want to have fire medicine. You're either, you know, when you have a ceremony, you're either going to have, like, an actual fire, or you're going to, you know, like, in lodge, you have, you know, grandfather's stones that are on fire, and they're glowing red, so they're embodying, you know, that fire transmutational type energy. And I think if anybody out there, you know, is kind of going through some pretty intense stuff, like everybody seems to be.
Raise your hand if you're not.
No. Yeah. Honk if you're not. I think that, you know, giving some people some ideas on how to have the grandfather, father help you through transitional period. So it's going to be a simple practice. It's going to be a personal fire practice. And you can have a candle. You know, the bigger the flame, the better, but, you know, don't want to burn your house down. I like to do a small bowl, you know, that's not going to burn up. And also you have to, you know, think about how you're going to touch that bowl. Like, so if it's a metal bowl or, you know, a ceramic bowl, you have to, a glass, you have to think about, you know, how hot can I get this, you know, before it cracks. And then, you know, also be mindful of, you know, getting a pot holder or something like that to, so that if you do grab it, you've got something to grab it with. It's always good to have a bowl that might have a lid on it. And one of my favorite things is solid steel pans, no Teflon. I find them at garage sales, the oldie but goodie ones with the lids. And they have a handle, a little stove pot. And then you have a lid as well. And I like to use like a stone or a brick to put the pot on. So that's kind of like what I prefer to, you know, build some fire medicine. You can do a fire medicine where you could do like a smudge pot. So let me give you a couple ideas about a smudge pot. What would I put into a smudge pot? Well, I'd buy some loose leaf sage or have some loose leaf sage dried. Right now, I'm also really into putting mullein and some of the mugwort that, you know, I've been doing a lot of work with into a smudge pot. Definitely my tobacco offering and prayer. I'm going to take the tobacco loose leaf out of the bag. I'm going to stick it in my left hand. I'm going to cover my left hand with my right hand. I'm going to pull those hands to my heart. And I'm going to just put something beautiful into that tobacco. Put it into the smudge pot. And then, you know, you could go ahead and light it. You could add, you know, a few more. Just make sure that if you are using herbs, you know, just do a little bit of research just to make sure that they're not toxic when burnt.
That would be good.
Yeah. And then you can, you know, light it and you can carry it around or you can leave it in one room or you can spend some time smudging yourself, you know, bringing in that smoke into the different area of your body where you have pain or discomfort or a headache or, you know, you want to clean your heart a little bit. Sometimes is a really good thing to do, or bring it up and clear your mind is always a really good thing to do as well. So we can do a smudge pot. We do like an advanced smudge pot. This one cleans the etheric, something I've been working with for a long time. It's developed over years, but you put Epsom salts, you know, like an inch of Epsom salts around your little pan pot, and then you fill it with alcohol. It doesn't matter if it's 70 or 90, but it has to light. So it has to be, you know, that kind of grade of alcohol. So if you buy it, you probably got to get some Everclear or, you know, high level, you know, Bacardi. If you want to put it in there, and then just, you know, gently cover the Epsom salt, and then you're going to put some dried sage in there. You're going to slap out your tobacco prayer by putting it in your left hand, covering with your right hand, bringing it up to your heart, and putting your intentions and light and love into it. So it goes in there, and then you're going to, well, you can put other stuff in there if you want. You could put, you know, something in there that you want to transmute. So say, for example, you have a picture of yourself when you were, really, really, you know, at your heaviest or your unhappiness, your unhappy point. And you could put that photo of that point in time, or you could draw a picture of yourself and how you feel about yourself, and you could put that into the advanced smudge pot and then light it on fire, and it's going to burn for quite a while. The ether clearing smudge pot, you need to give it space. So you want to put it in an area in your house where you want to clean up some stuff on the etheric level. You want to make sure that it's on a brick or a rock, because that pan is going to get hot. It will melt. You don't want to grab that thing with your hand, and you want to have the lid close by just in case you have like a little mini, you know, smudge pot emergency.
Maybe a cup of water.
Yeah, you know, have something like that as well, if you feel that that's what you need to do.
Don't put yourself under a smoke detector.
Yeah.
Crack a window.
Yeah, take the smoke detectors down, but then put them back up as soon as you're done.
Right. Check your batteries.
Yeah. And then, so we'll just talk about kind of like, you know, a flame. So smudge pots, you can always put like on an altar, you know. I love going to some of the native ceremonies and seeing, you know, these cans, you know, these big cans that, you know, maybe had beans or, you know, something in them, and then, you know, they put holes on them and they just tie basically, you know, baling wire to them, and they have a handle that you can kind of like move around the smudge, you know, set it down here and then move it around. You know, just kind of also reminds me sometimes of some of those priests, you know, that are flinging around those, you know, incense pots, clearing and cleaning the energy. So you can put that on your altar. You can let it just burn and drizzle out. You can work with that. Advanced pots are more for, you know, kind of advanced cleaning and, you know, more of the etheric. But the fire is really always important. You know, it's an aspect of medicine, of directional medicine. And so best way to kind of work with, I'm going to teach you a little shaman thing.
All right.
So I like to call it deflecting, reflecting, and connecting. And you can find that stuff on my YouTube channel. I've got those three videos. I think there's four videos explaining it. And they're basically like what I'm going to call like a magical pass, an energy pass, which is a movement. And basically, you know, you can do it with the sun and the sunlight. It's a great thing to do in the morning or, you know, when you're getting up and you're sore, or you're tired, or you can't get yourself grounded, and you can do the work with the sun, with the grandfather. And then you also, at the end of the day, can do it with the grandfather who's setting, you know, like you had a bad day, a hard day, and you can do this kind of work with the sun. So whether it's sunlight or fire or, you know, smoke, these are all, are, you know, stones that are heated up that look like they're on fire. You know, these are all components of what could be called like fire medicine, transmutational type medicine. So I like to get like a little candle. You could get a little candle, big candle. I like a big flame. I like a little candle with a big flame.
I like little candles too. I like being mindful of my candle colors, like reds, oranges, purples, either corresponding them to color psychology or the vibration or like the meaning of that color or relating them to the different chakras. But I find that the color of the candle is specific for me as well. I use a lot of white candles, but.
Yep. Or red. Red would be a really good one because of the fire and the sun.
I got some silver ones. I got some silver pillar candles.
So you can have that. Have your little fire. You know, make sure before you light it, you do a prayer. It's really important for you to kind of notify the good spirits, you know, the creator, the good spirits, your grandmothers and grandfathers, kind of like what's on your mind. So that, you know, they can do a better job with kind of coordinating that work with you. So deflection is like an act, and I will use my hands like straight out, flat and straight out. And what I'll do is I'll use them like I'm kind of whittling off my skin. And I'm going to deflect energy off of me onto the candlelight, or I'm going to deflect it off into the sunlight. Or if I have a little personal, little ceremonial fire altar that I'm working with, I'm going to deflect into that. So I can go anywhere on my body, wherever I feel anything that doesn't feel good. And I can take my hand and I can actually whip it off in a karate chop kind of motion off my body. Sometimes I'll even reach in to my field with my fingers and pull out some of that stuff. And then I'll flick it off and deflect it into the flame. And so I call that deflection. That's kind of the first step with clearing your energy work, your energy body to prepare for an energy shift, physical shift too. I've had like the worst headaches that I've done this work on that I could totally get rid of, could totally deflect off and clear off the energy out of my field. And so the second step is what I call the connecting phase. And that's basically, I'm just going to be open to the sun or the fire. I go into more, you know, different types of motion on my videos on YouTube, Conscious of Economics and Urban Farm Project YouTube channel, Deflect, Connect, and Reflect. And so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to connect with not only the energy field of the medicine I'm working with, the fire, the sun, but I'm also going to connect myself to all energy fields that are encircling me. So I'm just going to take the time to notice and feel, you know, different energy fields that are going on in the three levels. So there's the open eye level. There is the level where the eye is half open or half closed. And then there's the level where the eyes are closed. And so each level of sensing, you're going to sense different levels. And so you want to, when you're doing the connection work, you actually want to do some of it with your eyes wide open. You want to do some of it with your eyes, you know, half closed. And then you definitely want to do the same kind of work that you're doing with your eyes closed, because you're sensing, you know, on different levels and connecting to different levels of the energy field. So the last section, just to try to help people with a lot of the energy stuff that's going on and what's going on with them. And the third part is what I call the reflecting. And so what I'll actually do is I'll actually reach in to the fire, the sunlight, or, you know, those types of things. And I'll actually start pulling energy out of it until I've got like a glob. And then I'm going to actually rub it onto my body as if it's like a salve, you know, like it's something that is a big handful of lotion that I pull out. And then I'm going to rub it on the different areas that need that energy and that care. So I'm going to reach up. I really like to do it with the sun because I can really reach up and I can really pull out and I can really carve out that energy and bring it down. And then put it into the areas of my body. And you can use it for anything. It doesn't have to be just pain, but confidence, you know, happiness, sadness. I mean, there's so many, on top of being able to use it physically to help you heal more rapid. And it's really important to put a lot of that energy into your trunk, because your trunk is the area that, you know, like your abdomen area on the front and back, that's the area that leaks the most energy out of your field. And so the type of shamanism that I was trained in, we assess people's energy fields. And so when people start getting to like the panic attack period, your energy body is kind of more like saran wrap. And it's actually suffocating you. And so in shamanism, the training that I've had, I don't look at people dying of cancer or people dying of this. I see that they're dying because there isn't any energy left in their field. So when you do these kinds of practices, you know, where you're doing, especially, you know, the end, which is kind of the refill, you know, putting energy back into those areas, especially ones that you've deflected out, you know, quite a bit of the energy because, you know, it's not good. And you really want to spend a lot of time really pulling, you know, good energy back into those areas to help fill up your field. So try it. Just try it. Even if you, you know, don't think that you have, you know, all the ideas that are needed. Just try it. Just try a piece of it. Try doing some candlelight, you know, work and do a little some deflection, you know. And the more that you do like deflection work, deflecting, you know, what's not good into the fire, into a smudge pot, into, you know, your personal little fire, into the sun, what happens is you start to notice more and you start to actually get kind of builds an insight and a sensitivity to certain energies, and it becomes more and more easy and effortless to feel these energies when you first originally get them, instead of waiting to deal with them, you know, way down the road where they're, you know, starting to cause issues. You'll be able to feel a lot of this stuff kind of happen in you instantly. So try a little bit. Right now is a really good time. You know, there's stuff that you want to let go of. You know, get yourself like a nice personal fire. And, you know, even go outside in your little barbecue and light yourself a nice little wood fire. And don't forget to put, you know, if you're going to do a fire that size, then don't forget to do your tobacco prayer. Because your tobacco prayer is going to lead, it's going to lead the conversation. And you don't want it all over the map, you know. And sometimes people in the New Age movement get really too complicated with a lot of these, you know, affirmations and intentions. I mean, they could be like a whole page long. You got to like write the whole thing down. I just keep it simple. Everything for me in this work is thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Because I know that whatever comes to me that I'm thankful for is exactly what I want, right? Is exactly going to be the right and perfect thing. So I don't really need to go in with my long list of what I need, what needs to happen, if I need to be rescued or, you know, whatever is going on. I try not to plead with the Creator. I try to just do my work and connect with the good spirits and to get myself balanced and straightened out and get myself doing more of the good work. And so, you know, I get that tobacco prayer in my hand once I get the wood or whatever else down and the paper or whatever I'm going to light it with. And that tobacco prayer goes in my hand. My cup, that hand goes to my heart. And all I do is I put in there from my mind, I put in there, thank you. And from my heart, I put in there, thank you. And I just allow whatever is going to happen. But, you know, if you have a certain prayer that you feel like you need to pray while you're doing that, putting it in there, you know, that'll be important. So they know what's on your mind, but it's the key of you coming to them and in a non-trespassive way and asking permission, you know, to have a better relationship with some of these, you know, beings. And these are good beings. These are not, we're going to the good spirits. We're not dealing with the bad spirits. And so try it.
I like holding in my mind too that when it comes to prayer or asking for things, I like the thank you, because I like to keep in my mind that whatever is best for me and my highest good and that of everyone else is probably something better than I can imagine for myself. So I feel like if I try to force it or try to make it a thing or be too specific, then it comes out of ego, or then it maybe it would be granted, but it would possibly limit what could be better. Oh no, it's hard to stay out of that space of non-judgment.
But well, I think, look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are native corn seeds that are like, you know, 5,000 and 7,000 years old. They're like computer applications, you know. Mm-hmm. They have DNA and they have all these codes, and, you know, they've been around a lot longer than I've been around. And so when I think about spiritual stuff, like reaching out to the grandmothers and grandfathers and the Creator and the good spirits, I think about, like, they've been around so much longer than I have that there's nothing that I could tell them that they don't know, or, you know, that they haven't done. And I think that's why it's just easy to keep it simple. And because the thing is like, they don't understand, you know, those spirits, they don't really understand when we beg, you know, when we're trying to beg, or we're trying to manipulate a situation, or we're trying to control something or the outcome. They don't really understand that, because we're just not being honest and clear and telling them exactly, you know, what's going on. Thank you. I'm here. Bring it on.
In the realm of psychology, these ceremonies help us too, because they work as indicators for a transition to happen. They're little markers or cues into our psyche that we're intentionally looking for some sort of change, or we're becoming more conscious, I guess. Doing consciousness research and saying conscious, it seems like it just kind of loses its meaning, but we don't really know what it means in the first place. But I think when we don't have these aspects and elements of prayer in our life, when we leave that out of it, everything becomes so monotonous and things begin to run together. And it's so robotic. It just feels so detached from every, like you're saying, the creator, everything that comes before us, all the knowledge and all the wisdom that's inherent in everything around us. I'm too far away from it.
Yeah, well, it's because, you know, we're in the process of outrunning everything that we don't like. Oh, damn, I just...
Forest run comes to mind, but you can't... A forest can't run away from the fire.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is, like, you know, so, you know, for... Like, I used to go to this... thing I really like about shamanism is that there are sort of like some protocols, or like native spirituality, there are some protocols, but ultimately, excuse me, it's up to you to do the work. And being able to have like different protocols or steps or little things that I can do that can, you know, that I'm moving towards. And so I'm going to go light a candle. Say I have a candle that I use for spiritual purposes. Well, every time I start moving towards that candle, everything and everyone's watching me to see what I'm going to do next, right? Because they know that's the meeting place. So they want to know, like, what's going on, how we're going to do it, you know, how we're going to open it, and what's going to happen. There, you know, there's a story that kind of comes to mind, and it's in probably the best work that Carolyn Meese ever did was Energy Anatomy series. You can probably still buy them on CD sets, maybe even like downloads. I think it's six CDs, tapes. When it first came out, it was on tape in 92. And I played the tapes until the tape came out. And then I had CDs and I played them until every time that I listened to them, I heard something else. But she had this story about this woman, and I'll just call her Rose because I can't remember what the woman's name was. But this woman started praying, you know, to like her angels and be like, you know, help me and, you know, do this for me and do that for me. And, you know, like I need this and this needs to happen, blah, blah, blah. And one night Rose has a dream. And her, like, main angel who takes care of her, you know, like, her angel that, you know, is there all the time, 24/7, tells Rose, you know, like, you're tough. Like, you know, I don't really like being your angel. I don't really want to be your angel anymore. I'm actually kind of sick and tired of, you know, dealing with you. And Rose is, like, totally, like, doesn't get really what this angel is saying to her. You know, because in her mind, it's like, well, angels are just going to be there to take it or whatever else, you know, for the long haul and the duration. Sometimes we don't realize, like, they're super intelligent, you know, that maybe sometimes they get a little burned out and sick and tired on us. So the angel said, well, let me just show you a visual. And so Rose saw herself. She knew she was underneath, but there were all these, like, rubber bands around her, kind of like if you take the coating off a golf ball and you look in there and there's like billions of rubber bands wrapped up around each other. And so her whole body was covered with all these rubber bands, and so much so that one after another that you couldn't see Rose underneath anymore. And so the angel was like, you know, this is what I'm talking about. You have all this stuff so wrapped up tight and over you that I can't even get in there to you. And there's no common ground, in, you know, in which we can work, because, you know, Rose was just, you know, wanting what Rose wanted and praying. And, but Rose was also at the same time really closed off because she didn't want to get anything she didn't want. So it made it difficult for, you know, her angel to actually, you know, communicate with her. But I think that's a pretty interesting thing, you know, like if you could do like anybody out there who feels like, you know, this is kind of one of their criterias or their never ending story. You could do a visualization that you have all these rubber bands like wrapped around you, and you can visualize a, you know, a good spirit, an elemental, the creator, God, Buddha, Jesus, an angel. It doesn't really matter. I think it's just you have someone to work with, right? That's kind of in the energetic world.
And then you guide is helpful to work with in those places as well.
Exactly.
But you could have darkness.
Yeah, but you could give them, you know, special scissors to cut those rubber bands off of you as the visual. And you might have to do it several times. My medicine teacher who I studied with for a year when I was younger used to say that, you know, it's good to do a practice for at least 30 days because, you know, the stuff could keep coming back energetically and you may have to keep doing the same thing over and over again until you break through, you know, until those rubber bands don't come back.
I believe in psychology it's something like takes 27 times of doing something to form a habit.
Yeah.
So yeah, about 30 times.
Yeah, and you'll see that in the energetic structure. Like every time that you work with it, it'll get cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. But sometimes it takes quite a bit of work to get it, you know, completely cleaned up. But, you know, you could do a visual, do some kind of visualization like that where you're cutting yourself, you know, out of bondage right now, right? You're cutting yourself free of not just what's going on around you, but what's going on inside of you as well, especially in your mind.
Well, because pictures can speak a thousand words. I mean, we can try to rationalize and be logical and think about things all day long, and it doesn't do it justice. But to paint the picture, to create a picture for what you're going through, it conveys so much more. And I think you can get so much more done in such a short period of time. Because words create different pictures in the head. Like if I say cat, if I tell you to picture a cat in your head, the picture of the cat in your head is different than the picture of the cat in my head is different than the cat in the picture of the listener's head, right? But it's a cat, and we can agree that it's a cat, but then we can also, in the context of conversation, agree that cats are now dogs, so every time we see a dog, we also see a cat, or every time we see a cat, we also see a dog. But if you send the picture of the cat, of a very specific image, if it's a picture of a black cat, that black cat, the metaphors and the archetypes that are included within that portray or convey so much more depth and so much more meaning. People just, I don't really understand why people stray away from it so much, other than there are certain people who are just not visual people. There are people who are more auditory people, or people have a hard time seeing things in their head. And I wonder, like, for people like that, if there's an alternative or, like, a different way that they could approach this.
Well, I mean, the physical, like, deflecting, that type of work, and the reflecting and getting energy back inside, everyone can do, because you could actually stand there and do it physically, too.
That
makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, like, all these spiritual things, you can do them physically, you can do them mentally, you can do them visually, you could do them audioly.
Yeah.
I just made a new word, audioly. But yeah, you know, choose choose what you want to do. And it's easier to do the more these kinds of visualization work than it is. I used to do years ago, I was doing this Sangha. It was a super hard meditation circle. It was like 45 minutes to an hour. So everybody would set up. You could only change your posture. So you had to sit in lotus. And then you could make two slight, very quiet, non-disturbing changes in that. But for the most part, you kind of had to hold it. And then it was silent. It was a totally silent meditation. So when I first started doing this meditation, it was tough. I mean, it was really tough. I think it was like 25. And I had the hardest time trying to figure out like what am I getting out of it? Because I would sit there and I had so much like tension in my body that I literally had pain in my hips and, you know, like my ankles are going numb and my knees and like starting to hurt and having all of these, you know, intense sensations. And nobody really worked with me on, you know, how to deal with that kind of stuff. Because a lot of the people who come from other cultures, they already have this spiritual component, right? They already have these different pieces of understanding, and then bring it to the U.S. and we have no point of reference. And so we have to be kind of taken back to the basement level of trying to figure it out. So once I figured out that I had to struggle, you know, with however many months it was going to take until I could sit for 45 minutes and my body didn't bother me at all, then I'd have to start working, you know, on my mind and dealing with my emotional stuff, my mind, you know, because every time you're going to slow down and you're going to sit in like a very intense, quiet meditation like that, everything is like battling you, especially your body. And this is why I like more of the shamanism work, because if I need to move the energy around physically, I can do that. If I need to, you know, do it mentally, I can do that. There's lots of different ways to do it. And there is no, you know, like, this is it. This is the only way that you could do it. Those kinds of meditation practices were just way too difficult for me. And I didn't really thrive. I mean, I just struggled with a lot of physical pain in order to actually, you know, sit in the very stringent posture for 45 minutes to an hour. So there are so many different ways, you know, to meditate. I know a lot of people like to garden. Garden is a very connective. You're connecting to something. You're looking at it. You're responding to it. That's a very meditative thing. So meditation is super important because it helps you to fine tune your relationship with your internal self. And sometimes it's going to be physical body battle. Sometimes it's going to be a mental battle. Sometimes it's going to be a big emotional battle. Like even just doing basic yoga, sometimes like I'll have to move into doing some kind of stretch. Then I realize like there's just all this emotional energy tied up there. And sometimes I'll just have to sit on the mat and cry it out before my body will even actually go into that posture because of whatever is going on around me has created so much tension and stress.
I think learning how to sit through that discomfort is really tricky. And if there's anything that ties together the first part of our show and the second part of our show, as far as, you know, going through home care and the challenges that takes for caretaking, it's being able to tolerate and withstand levels of discomfort for long periods of time. Like sitting still for a long time is so hard. Part of what I do is workshops in nude modeling or teaching nude modeling. And as somebody who's been a model for life drawing classes for over 15 years, a big part of that is learning how to sit very still or to hold a pose in a position for a very, very long time. And it's so uncomfortable. You have to know your body very well to know what it can tolerate. You have to anticipate what's going to fall asleep or what's going to tingle and where and why. And once you understand how the body functions within that, then it's like you're saying, once you sit into that space, you've got to work through the emotional stuff that comes through. You have to learn how to sit with that. And then even just sitting with some of the odd things that the body does, like if you sit and stare at one spot for long enough, you're going to start hallucinating. Things are going to start moving and shifting around. Like, you have to anticipate these natural biological responses. And if you can find a way to do so with the intention, with meditation in it, I mean, there's so much strength to be gathered from that, so much energy that can be brought in. It's so powerful. Yeah, sitting in discomfort and being able to tolerate things that aren't comfortable. It's not easy, but it can be learned. And this is why people get so used to being in really high stress environments, and it becomes the norm. It becomes normal. You adapt to it. I think meditation is a good way to learn how to adapt and to get really comfortable in the body, because so much of our social structures and so much of what we teach is dissociating, right? And getting out of the body and not being connected to the world around us and compartmentalizing. And when people sit still for long periods of time, or they start to dive into these parts of the body where the emotions are stored, and then up comes things that have been buried, traumas and hurts and pains and ideas and thoughts and memories that have been jammed way down there. And if you don't have the skills to work through that old stuff when it comes up, you're going to be hurting. And that's part of learning how to sit still for a really long time is learning how to navigate the challenges that come out of that and that come after that, because you can't force something to happen. I've definitely been in positions within yoga, especially through Kundalini, where kind of the same thing. I've ended up in tears on the mat, and I've just ended up having to process things emotionally before even being able to get into that position. But it's fascinating, because you go from not being able to hold the pose to processing the emotion to being able to sit with this discomfort for extended periods of time, be it 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour. Like, it's not easy. I mean, even sitting still for 5 minutes can be really hard for a lot of people. Hang on.
Axe has an opportunity for Kelsey, it sounds like. Okay, so
he's playing on video games. I got him doing like brain teaser games and stuff like this over here. So we're learning how to spell.
Diamond.
And then it's a good time. He does pretty good during the shows with us. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, I think it's just because it's later in the day. And, you know.
We went to the park today. We went to two parks today. We played baseball with the puppy, and we ran around a whole bunch. Tried to enjoy the warm weather in the winter, which is strange. And the sunset today was absolutely gorgeous and beautiful.
It was. We went outside and saw it, and it was just gorgeous here tonight.
There's one thing about Northern Nevada that I love so much. It is our sunsets. And the sunsets this time of year and in the autumn and sometimes in the spring, and they are just phenomenal. Just so vibrant.
And rain. I always tell people are always like, you know, what's your favorite smell? And it's like rain on a Nevada desert that's been dry for a long time. There's nothing that smells better or even close to what that smells like.
The only thing that I can think of that smells close to it is sweet grass. That's one of those tools that I like to keep in my smudge kits, is the sweet grass, because it has that earthy kind of rained on smell to it. But it's so subtle. You're right, the rain in the desert, there's nothing like it. That dusty sage.
Yep, yep. No, it smells so, so good. Okay, so maybe I'll teach just one. I'll teach like another practice that's super helpful. I learned this actually in the, when I was in an ashram. And the ladies that I was, you know, doing work with were so funny because they well, we'll just kind of tell you what the deal is. So they said that, you know, it's not a good thing to actually practice Om, especially if you're a woman, because Om is the male, right? It's the male god. And in that version, chanting Om, what happens is that you, because men will even leave their families, they'll leave everything behind, they'll do vows of poverty, vows of celibacy, they take this really hard line in developing, you know, the spiritual approach. And so Om is that. And so they said that, you know, like if you are practicing Om, you're going to have financial problems, your bank accounts are going to close, you'll probably get fired from your job, your marriage will, you know, divorce, because you're basically chanting Om, which is the male side of the god, which is, you know, part of ancient history, which means that you have to have everything stripped from you to actually walk that path, because that's what that path is about. And they said that the other side of it was the Ong. The Ong was the female expression of God. And the Ong was birthing into reality, you know, thoughts, feelings, lots of other types of things into the reality, instead of having to walk away from everything, you know, actually creating it and then birthing it into this world. But one of the things that they really like to do, because they really like to try to stay away from the whole, you know, Ong, Om, and any beautiful chanting, they like to stay away from because they felt that, that sometimes we had to get more primal in order to get a lot of that stuff released. And so it's kind of like embarrassing, kind of, you know, when you first start doing it. Like I had a really hard time in the group, you know, when we would do the, you know, this part of the throat chakra clearing process. And basically you just kind of go, so you're sitting, you could be sitting Indian style or sitting in the chair, or kind of moving into like a meditation, or maybe you're going to move into doing some yoga or whatever else it is, and you feel like there's some blocks. And so basically you can just kind of, you know, primally move it out. So it kind of sounds like this. It kind of sounds like rough. So I'm going to hit a point in my body, and obviously my neck is just really killing me from being strangled last night. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in there and kind of feel around on a intuitive level. And then I'm going to feel what it feels like in there, the sounds. And so it's going to sound like something like this, right? Ooh, and it popped. Did you hear that? My neck popped. Right on. But, you know, you can do it from the gut. You can do it from, you know, like if your knee hurts and you're stressed out, you have a lot of tension in your body. There's something about connecting the sound to the area and just sitting with it for a few minutes to, like, get it to release. So you could do, like, a real gut one, like, way down deep. No. And so let's see, I've got some gut stuff from, you know, going through what I went through, some trauma. So let me see if I can kind of connect in there, see what we've got going on. So that one is going to be kind of, it's going to move over to the side. It's trying to get away from me. It's going to sound like, let's see if I sit with it. Oh, and my back popped. So, yeah, so
plane of sand.
Snake. The exact spot on my spine that I needed for it to pop. So you can work with that kind of stuff. And I know it sounds pretty silly, but just sometimes like the simplest things can like free us from, you know, a lot of the deep stuff that's going on inside of us. So, you know, in osteopathic medicine, that's my my work, tension equals disease. And tension can not only create disease, but also can create death because, you know, there's so much tension in the body, you don't have circulation, you're going to have blood pressure problems, you're going to have muscle problems, nerve problems, your brain's not going to be firing so well, connecting with the parts of your body, regeneration, your organs are going to have a lot of tension. So sometimes just like the simplest things, and it's not so much about the practice. It's just stopping long enough to acknowledge that there may be something going on, right? And that as we're like running through our life, like it's a marathon, you know, just stopping for a few minutes to go, you know, this hip hasn't really felt right all day and I feel like I'm limping on it and I'm just going to stop. I'm just going to stop for a minute and I'm just going to like sit with it for just a minute and I'm just going to pay attention to it for a minute. Maybe I even put my hand on it, give it some support. Hey, I'm here. I'm supporting you. Hey, hipper, how's it going? All right, I'm here. What do you need? And doing, you know, different kinds of things to actually get it to release so that you can move on and let go and not hold on.
Because in some of these releases, or I wonder if anybody else out there can relate to this. How do you get through the want or like the urge to like want to stop partway through, or when things get kind of uncomfortable or you get partway and then you're just like, nope, too much, go to it, and you just kind of check out and drop the practice? Like how, like what are the implications for that, for one? And then like two, what are some tips to work through that and to be able to sit with that a little bit better?
Well, I don't think there are really a whole lot of tips. I think it's like you just gotta
do it.
You gotta choose yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make yourself a priority, which means that, you know, if you decide that you're gonna feel something or you're gonna stop and feel it and it senses and you pick up that, you know, your job is, you know, in your hip and it's creating a whole imbalance in your body and you talk to the hip about, hey, is there any way that, you know, we can bring all this back into balance and still keep this job? And, you know, the answer comes back no, time and time again. Then, you know, you may actually have to do something extreme in your life, which means quit your job and get a new job that brings you and your body, you know, back into balance. So the listening can be terrifying and it can be hard. And your leg might go, I don't like you, and I never have.
I always found that interesting with body talk, where there's like the specific areas of the body that will stand out. It's important to listen, otherwise it catches up with you later on, and then you're in for the long haul of it. And then what do you do? Then you gotta go to the doctor, blow a bunch of money, go through surgeries. That's not fun.
Yeah, and think about it, like, you know, I mean, what did people do in the past? They weren't like running all over the place, you know, trying to get a surgery all the time. They had to like deal with things, you know, they had to, and maybe it was like because they just lived more towards the land or maybe with the land or whatever it is that, you know, they had a better relationship, you know, not only with their body, but, you know, with what was being grown and the environment around them. I think, you know, that is a huge issue for a lot of us. I mean, especially Americans, you know, and the whole, you know, you see a lot of cultures that want to be like Americanized, but it's a very damaging thing. I think about 5 years ago, I read a report that they said that Hispanic women turned within 13 years and became, you know, highly stressed out. They had like really high infant mortality rate after a certain period of time of being Americanized. And I think it was like 13 years where, you know, African-American women, you could see it like, you know, right out the gate within like, you know, 3 or 4 years. And then you could see the stress level in the women and just the whole cultural stress play out. And then, you know, it raised the infant mortality rate in that culture as well.
So it's super important to figure out how to chill out and process all of your stuff and smudge out all of the things and deflect all the things that aren't important. No, we got to hard to shift.
Well, first you've got to define what, you know, we're getting ready. The show's almost over, like a couple seconds. But I think that the key is like, first you have to determine, you know, what you do want. You know, and I think in American culture too, we spend more time focused on what we don't want, and then the law of attraction gives us more of what we don't want, because that's what our focus is, instead of more of like what I do want.
Yeah, if you go looking for the faults, you're going to find them and create that self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, and I think for me, more than ever, you know, being 52 now, because I turned 52 on Friday, you know, I just want to be in a place of peace.
Happy birthday to you. Donate to the radio station and us too.
All right, everybody, it's the end of the show. We'll see you again next week. Thanks.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays. Happy solstice.
Happy solstice. Adios.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.